Well, suddenly I feel like I've gone from a podcaster to season 9 of Dallas. For all you kids out there, Dallas was a nighttime, primetime soap opera, a way back when. And they killed off a key character in that nighttime soap opera called Dallas. And then the character was going to come back. I guess the actor and the producers sorted out their business. And in one of the lamest, absolutely lamest writing attempts in television history, the writers of the TV nighttime soap opera Dallas decided to bring back Bobby Ewing by declaring the entire last season, when he was dead, to have been a dream. And he just wakes up and they start things all over again and wiped out the entire, all the plot lines from the season before were gone because you see, his death was just a dream. I feel Dan Mehar as we get into this episode of the OHL podcast. It is still a podcast. It's not nighttime soap operas on television, but I think we wiped out last week's episode entirely because we sat here and we praised the Ontario Hockey League for its stiff but fair suspensions related to Bounty Gate in Sudbury. And about 24 hours after we published last week's episode, the league said undo, and they clicked the undo button, and it's all gone to HE double hockey sticks. What is going on around here?
Well, you've already worked in a Dallas reference. This is gonna be
Yes.
tough. Like I might have to, like Larry Hagman, I Dream of Jeannie. I'm gonna have to get my up my game here. But yeah, absolutely. It's one step forward, one step, two steps back. I don't know what to call this, but it feels like that with me with the OHL for the last several years, where every time they do something that impresses me, then they turn around and kind of do something that I completely question. And I think in general, as a general principle, walking back your decisions is a bad look. It should happen very rarely because it says a bunch of things. It says, A, we didn't do due diligence and proper research and dive into this in the first place to get the decision right. And secondly, you're kind of wishy-washy. Like your message, what is it? That this is okay, that this isn't okay, that we were emotional 2 days ago, now we're not. Like it just all kinds of bad optics around this one. I think do your due diligence, make your call, and stand behind it. That's kind of my philosophy.
Anybody, great Larry Hagman reference. Anybody, and the difference of Larry Hagman, I Dream of Jeannie, to Larry Hagman, J.R. Ewing on Dallas. But anybody that talks about I Dream of Jeannie without talking about Barbara Eden and the Jeannie's outfit first, I don't even know. Of course, the references aside, the story here is the appeal of the 15-game suspension to Nathan Villeneuve and the 10-game suspension to Evan Cognon for their roles in placing a bounty on Kashawn Aitchison of the Barrie Colts. So Cognon's suspension goes from 10 games down to 6. He'll be back for the final weekend before the playoffs this weekend upcoming. And the real curious one here is Nathan Villeneuve's, which is a suspension that remains at 15 games, except he does 9 this season and 6 at the beginning of next season. So that in between, you see, there's something that happens at the end of one regular season before the beginning of the next, and those are the playoffs. So he gets to play in every one of Sudbury's playoff games and then serve 6 more games at the beginning of next season. Optics, you're right, Dan. Walking anything back makes it look like you did not do your due diligence the first time around. You didn't listen to all parties. You didn't weigh all evidence carefully, etc. But the dangerous precedent that this sets now, that basically says suspensions apply to regular season only. How does the league suspend any player between now and the end of the season? I know we're down to 3, 4 games at most for teams, but how does any player get a suspension that carries over into the playoffs based on this precedent? And I would argue, because we're talking precedent here, precedent lasts a long time. It's used in courts of law from decades prior when that precedent was set. How do you ever, again, punish somebody by way of suspension that carries over from the regular season into the postseason? I don't see how you can. And this is just a rotten, rotten look for the league.
Absolutely, I agree with everything you said, and I know a key principle of justice systems is the right to appeal and the right to have your case reheard and bring new evidence. So I understand that there's got to be a mechanism there where maybe someone could bring something up that mitigates it or changes your mind. But I still struggle with why wasn't all of this brought to your attention in the first place and weighed carefully. And here's an idea. You talk about the ridiculousness, Mike, of going from regular season suspension, allowing them to play in the playoffs. And oh, by the way, you're suspended again. I've heard a lot of theory in the NHL level that they count a playoff game as two regular season games when it comes to suspensions. Maybe apply. Obviously, you're saying the same thing. You value playoffs higher than regular season. Fair enough. So apply whatever formula that is. If it's the same as the NHL, well, if there's six more games, well, then that's three playoff games. So we're suspending them for 12 and it runs into game three of the playoffs. Don't have this ridiculous. You're suspended. Now you're not. Now you're suspended again. That's just, it seems like kangaroo court stuff to me. So I don't know how they reconcile the whole appeal thing. I think for my mind, an appeal maybe goes to a different arbiter to see if that one feels any differently and could speak to the first one and maybe come to some resolution. Or if something wild and new came up, some piece of evidence that wasn't heard in the first time around. But to my mind, you ask all parties involved, like you just said, you get all your material, you get all your evidence, you weigh it, you consider it, you make your ruling, you stand by it. Having suspension, no suspension, suspension again, just seems absolutely ludicrous.
I had the exact same thought as you just shared about weighting playoff games 2-1. And so you could have, I think you could have even come out with, you go into the room, you have the conversation, you weigh all the evidence, you come out with a suspension and you decide this is worth 15 games. That's how strong a message we have to send. But you know what, guys, that's going to carry over into the playoffs for six. So let's announce it as a 12-game suspension where the three playoff games equal six regular season games. And then Nathan Villeneuve is back in the first round for the Sudbury Wolves. Doesn't even miss a full round, because I get it. If he misses six playoff games, it's possible he misses an entire round. It's possible he misses Sudbury's entire playoff run, depending on how it goes. You just don't know at this point. So come back and either explain that publicly, or if you don't want to be direct about the 2-1 weighting of playoffs versus regular season, then just announce a 12-game suspension, knowing that that's the way you factored all of this together. You could have done that. I'm worried now. Like, heaven forbid, Dan, heaven forbid that Nathan Villeneuve injures somebody in the playoffs. Like, how do you, the league is on the hook for such liability in that case. And I'm not wishing it on anybody. And the likelihood is slim, but it exists. And if that happens, this league has blood all over its hands. I don't know how you rationalize the walk back of a decision like this when the player who was the victim in all of this already sat for two regular season games just for a safety precaution. So Evan Kanyon, the accomplice or the lesser of two evils here, gets six, but the player who was the victim sat two just as a safety precaution. And the other thing that comes out to me, particularly around the Villeneuve angle of this, which is by far the most appalling, are we seeing preferential treatment here? Is the league once again demonstrating what this is all about? We know it's the premier development league in the world. Well, Nathan Villeneuve is in his draft year, and the best time to be seen by scouts and show what you're made of is in the playoffs. So you want to sit a guy for six games during his playoff run in his draft year? Apparently not, according to the Ontario Hockey League, which sends a direct message. Well, at very least, an implied message that draft status matters, caliber of player, talent level matters, whatever you want to call it. They are prioritizing the wrong things here.
For sure. Absolutely. So as usual, a million different dynamics come into play. And you hit on a very key point, is that this is a key year for Nathan Villeneuve to get eyes on him during the playoffs. So if you're withholding him from that opportunity, suddenly you're hearing from the family, you're hearing from the agent, you're hearing from all these different angles that say, you know, you're costing a potentially significant opportunity here. Are you exposing yourself to liability from the other angle? So you get all these dynamics at play. So there is more to it than just saying, come on, league, smarten up here. But your first point about what happens if Nathan Villeneuve injures someone in the playoffs is fair. That's the first consideration. And I think the league is probably thanking their stars that Sudbury has played their way down the standings to the point where Kashawn Aitchison's not likely going to be their first, or is not going to be their first round opponent anymore. So imagine how they would have been sitting on pins and needles had that matchup happened. Would have been great intrigue for us, Mike, and for the podcast. But can you imagine every single time that player was on the ice, especially against Villeneuve or Kanyan, imagine how nervous everyone would have been about what might transpire, intentionally or not.
Here's something else that was brought to my attention. And I'm not going to claim to understand every letter of the law. I'm not involved in the legal profession at all. But when this was brought to my attention, it did give me pause. There is an aspect of this that it was a private chat not meant for public consumption, right? So if you and me, Dan, were sitting around the bar, or let's say a group of us, or let's say we played our beer league hockey, we all went out to the bar and something happened in that game. And I sat around with all of you guys after the game and we decided among the eight of us or however many were at that bar that next time out, you know, I'm picking up the round or the night's tab for the person that does this, that, or the other thing. And we talk about it at the bar and there's no paper trail, so to speak, because it was a private team chat that got leaked. Maybe there is shaky legal ground that the league is on. I would like to think not, but maybe. I'm going to come back to this though. And we talked about it last week and I'll share this story by way of example. And then I promise I'm going to let this go, but I am really upset by this. I think the league, I've pumped the league's tires. I feel this season doing a good job with the, you know, getting suspensions done in a timely manner. I think the discipline has been fairly even-handed, et cetera. It's been one of the better years, quite frankly, and I've given Barkley Branch credit for that. This is a tremendous disappointment to me. It undoes the good work that had been done to this point, and it exposes the league in so many ways that we've already touched on. Here's why, and I'll just share this story to go back to last week, why I said that I supported the suspension as it was, because there are some real world implications in this. Not meant for public consumption because it was a private team chat, fine, but you typed it down on a screen, didn't you? It got published somewhere. And that's the message that has to be taken away from this. I live next door to an elderly fella who is just one of the salt of the earth type people that everybody should have a Johnny to live next door to, like I have. And in the past year, he had to have some kidney surgery. So he was on crutches for a while. Now you have to understand that even though he's about 20 years my senior, he's one of the most active guys. He's the guy that's always out there shoveling people's sidewalks, using a snowblower for half the neighborhood. He mows people's lawns. He rakes their, he just keeps himself busy, keeps himself active. When he was on crutches, it was driving him bananas because he couldn't do as much as he usually does. Well, then he gets the brilliant idea that he's going to go down to the basement of his house on his crutches, like just a few days after he got them. He's not very good on his crutches yet. What happens? He takes a fall. Now he buggers up his shoulder to the point that this entire last winter and the tail end of the summer fall, he couldn't do any of the outdoor work. Other people in the neighborhood are picking up Johnny's slack because he's basically incapacitated. And he'll wander around now that he can walk again. He talks to everybody in his broken English. He's an Italian immigrant. And he just complains that he can't do all the things he wants to do because he hurt himself. And this is what he has said to me repeatedly in his broken English. You do a stupid decision, you get a stupid result. He did a stupid decision trying on his brand new crutches to go down the stairs. He says, I should have sat on my bum and slid. But no, not Johnny. He's going to go down on his crutches that he'd had for like 2 or 3 days. And what happened? He fell. He got the stupid result. He did a stupid thing. He got a stupid result. Dear Nathan Villeneuve, Evan Kanyan, and anybody else involved in that private team chat, you do a stupid decision, you get a stupid result. You are so lucky the league also did a stupid decision here. And now we're stuck with the stupid result. I'll get off my soapbox.
The saying you hear all the time, right? Play stupid games, win stupid prizes. So right. That applies for sure. And I just do want to quickly touch on your point, though, about the private conversation, because I do believe in that. We all say things in private conversations that we wouldn't want getting out publicly. We're all humans. No one's above that. And there is a sanctity to those conversations. So there is a bit of a gray line there. But like you said, anything you type into a computer, onto a screen, you better be darn sure you trust whom it's going to, because there are all kinds of ways that can get out. In a larger team chat, clearly someone there allowed that to get out. So again, a bit of a stupid game there, but you're right. There is a fine line, because I'm not sure we all should be held to account for private conversations that we have with trusted individuals. You don't always say what you mean there. Sometimes there's venting, sometimes there's other things, but lesson learned, right?
Remember, you can send us an email on this podcast. We will read it, good, bad, or otherwise. So say whatever the hell you want. We do every week. So ohlpodcast@rogers.com is the email address you can use anytime, or tweet us. That goes on the screens too. We'll respond at Dan Mahar on Twitter or at Farwell_OHL. We've got an email from Charlie in Kingston to get to later on in this episode. Just to kind of take it one step further with what's going on in Sudbury, video from this weekend, the Sunday game between Owen Sound and the Sudbury Wolves in Owen Sound, and Chase Coughlin, it's a little bit difficult to tell everything from the video. I've heard this described as one of the dirtiest hits in the league so far this season. I think that might be a little bit of hyperbole. However, Cervak Petrovsky of the Owen Sound attack is away from the puck for several seconds when Chase Coughlin kind of comes by, catches Petrovsky unawares with a shoulder to the head. Coughlin got 5 in a game for head checking. Whether or not there is supplemental discipline remains to be seen. I will say this, based on the conversation we just had, Dan, I don't know how you can give Chase Coughlin anything more than 3 games. And if you do, because there are 3 games left in the regular season, if you give him more than 3, and I'm Chase Coughlin, I am appealing the hell out of that suspension, because how can you carry Chase's suspension into the playoffs if you dropped Villeneuve's?
And what happens if you're an overager? You're not coming back next year. So those suspensions get doled out differently. I mean, you've set up all, you, like you said, you've opened a can of worms with this kind of nonsense in terms of the rulings. But anyway, I digress. On the hit itself, same. The camera angle I saw wasn't great. It looked to me like it could have been anywhere in that range of kind of just stupid brush to very dirty. Didn't get a good enough angle. My main point on this type of play, and I've been venting about this for years in the OHL to the officials, I know it's tough because you're going to get an earful from the coaches. The fans aren't going to like it as you have that rough in period where people have to get used to it. But any of this stuff away from the play, after the whistles, the stuff that has no part of the game, like when you're skating to the bench after a whistle and you get a piece of another player, even if it's just a little shove, call that. End it. It's this dynamic of players. Some call it gamesmanship. Some call it all that kind of stuff. It's not. It's just nonsense. It's outside of the game. It's this nonsense that goes on with all the yapping around the bench where players, especially in that area of the ice, feel they have to get a little shot in, prove their toughness to the team, react. Call it early and often. Get rid of it. Send a message that anything that happens completely away from the puck, between the whistles, has got to go. And then you're going to end this stuff. People are not going to feel empowered. Oh, wow, if I raise my elbow here, I'm hurting my team. Because that doesn't exist right now, you see all kinds of players do it. Some teams worse than others, but all kinds of players do it. And the league has created an environment where that's kind of okay. So just end it.
2 things I'll add to this. One that I think goes in Chase Coughlin's favor, and that is that Cervak Petrovsky came back later in the game and even scored a goal. So if we factor in severity of injury, clearly it wasn't too severe. The other thing that I just kind of got a chuckle out of from this, it's Cervak Petrovsky that gets felled by the shoulder to the head, and it's James Petrovsky who jumps in to come to his defense. No relation. And I would just like the Owen Sound attack and every other team to keep in mind that as a broadcaster, selfishly, I don't need a Petrovsky and a Petrovsky, no relation, on the same damn team. But I thought it was kind of funny. Cervak goes down and James comes in to chase down Chase Coughlin and make the statement after the somewhat questionable hit. Certainly a poor choice by Chase Coughlin in that regard. Okay, can we move on, Dan, to something more fun, I think, to talk about? A couple of weeks ago, might be a few weeks ago now, you and I talked right here on this podcast about the statement week from the Oshawa Generals. Remember, they put up a banner week with consecutive wins over London, Sault Ste. Marie, and the Sudbury Wolves. And that was, I believe at the time, part of five in a row overall. But those three, at that point of the season, we said, statement by the Oshawa Generals. Well, the Oshawa Generals must have heard us and said, hey, Dan, hey, Mike, hold our beer or Gatorade, because they're not all 19. And now the Oshawa Generals have reeled off 10 consecutive wins and actually found a way to get some separation at the top of that wacky Eastern Conference.
Well, I know, in speaking of private conversations, Mike, I remember back around the New Year's Day game, you texted me to say that that was one of the most entertaining games you saw when the Kitchener Rangers were down in Oshawa playing Oshawa. And then it kind of blew you away in relation to some of the other games you had seen in the year, that Oshawa was an entertaining team to watch, had a lot going for them. It was just a well-played, entertaining hockey game. And I think since then, that was the first notice they served, I suppose, in our world. But when you rattle off 10-0 down the stretch in a tight conference like that against some of the teams you just rattled off, this team is the real deal. I think clearly the deadline, trade deadline winner, based on what they did. At time, it looked like they were going to be a road team in the playoffs. And we were thinking, well, this is a road team you might not want to face. They're kind of coming on. Now it's looking like they're going to have home ice throughout, potentially. And does that make them even more scary that you have to go into Oshawa to play that team, a big physical team, lots of weapons? If you're looking for best player in the league right now, you've probably got seven or eight names in the mix, but can Callum Ritchie not be in there? I mean, he's just phenomenal with the puck, and he's really added a dynamic to that team that it needed, because the rest of the components were there. So now, I mean, all bets are off, and had this Oshawa Generals team looked like this at the start of the year, they probably would have been our choice for the conference champion.
Just a couple of games left in the season for the Oshawa Generals. They'll play the Kitchener Rangers next, this coming Friday. But going back, and I'm going to touch on the trade deadline in a moment too, because I think you're onto something when you talk about what Roger Hunt did as the general manager to improve his hockey club there in Oshawa. But along with those wins we already talked about, London, Sioux, Sudbury, they've since reeled off wins over Ottawa, Brantford, Mississauga, Sudbury again. So it's not like they're beating, you know, teams that are that much beneath them in the standings. They're beating quality hockey clubs for sure. You mentioned Callum Ritchie. Well, over this 10-game winning streak for the Oshawa Generals, he's got 16 points, 7 goals, and 9 assists. He's got a point in every one of those games. And then following along, just at the pace that Ritchie is setting, you've got Dylan Rubric, who's picked up 19 points, and he's got points. He's got 8 and 11. He's got points in 9 of the 10 games. And Beckett Seneca also points in 9 of the 10 games with 7 goals and 13 assists in 9 of those 10 games. So I think offensively, obviously, that speaks to how this team is rolling right now. Over the 10-game run, they've scored 54 and only allowed 28. Find me an Ontario Hockey League team that's allowing less than 3 goals a game, and I'll find you a successful hockey team. But you talk about the trade deadline, and you think about the additions of Connor Punnett and Zachary Sandu, on the blue line. Both left shots, which the team needed. You took a defense that was already pretty good, and you made it that much better. And there's an old saying in this league that defense wins championships. And you put Sandu and Punnett on an already talented blue line. Ben Danford is a shot-blocking machine for that hockey club. They are well-coached. Going back to what you said when I texted you on New Year's Day, having watched that game, it was one of those games. It reminded me a little bit of a 1-0 or 2-1 baseball game. And I know a lot of people that will complain about a game like that, and I love them, because traditionally, if that's the score, it's well pitched, there's good defense, and that's what we saw between both the Rangers and the Oshawa Generals in that game back on New Year's Day. It was structured. There weren't a lot of mistakes. The teams played well. So yeah, it wasn't 7-6. It wasn't 9-8. Sometimes you get those scores and you love it in the Ontario Hockey League, but it was just a well-played hockey game. So this is a well-coached team. They know who they are. They know how to stick to their structure. And you mentioned Callum Ritchie. Don't forget that this guy didn't play his first game this year until November. Took him a little bit to warm up, but over the past 40 games, he's going at better than a point and a half per game clip. This Oshawa team is nasty right now, and as we've already documented, has used this run to give itself some separation at the top of the Eastern Conference. It's really impressive, especially to be doing it right now.
You know, your summary is bang on. There's not a whole lot I can add to that other than just to touch on that trade deadline point and say, when I evaluate who did well or did not do well at the trade deadline, what I'm looking for from a GM is to take some time in the first half of the season, identify what is missing, what components are missing. That might not all be sexy high-end components you go out there and try and get, but identify what's missing on your team structure, find some options around the league, and then negotiate the best price you can. And I don't know that anyone did that better than Roger Hunt this year, because you just identified the left shot D, some of the components he needed, went out there and got them. I mean, got Connor Lockhart for incredibly cheap right off the bat. There's a number one center. Then you get, you talk about Sandhu, what an under the radar ad, but a guy that, like you said, can kind of do everything, right? Can move the puck, can defend, adds that left shot component. And then the guy that was sitting on that trade block all year that I was just kind of saying, wow, this guy is going to be a huge ad and no one's talking about him, was Connor Punnett. I thought any defense, you put him in that mix and automatically you move probably a couple ranks up the standings. So Roger Hunt identified what he needed, not necessarily what were the most sexy, biggest names on the block, identified his needs, found a few options, negotiated the best price, and look at the results. So that's how I evaluate the GMs. And for my money, Roger Hunt's right up top this year.
Love Punnett's game. We talked about him last week, having signed that deal with the Dallas Stars. And Jeff Merrick reported through this week about the reason that Punnett got the attention that he did and earned himself that contract. We all know he plays the game with some jam, the sandpaper we like to talk about, but it was actually dropping the gloves and getting involved in a fight. Heaven forbid, let's all clutch our pearls. There's a fight in the Ontario Hockey League. That's okay. They happen. They're big boys. They know what they're doing. Anyway, that was one of the key parts of the signal to the Dallas Stars that this guy is ready to take the next step, or at least they're trying to take him to that next step. So it's a fun story, and the league really needs this fun story right now, considering everything that's going on elsewhere. And you mentioned when we were talking about Sudbury, Dan, how they may find themselves in sixth place before this is all wrapped up. They're stumbling and bumbling just a little bit right now. It's still so tight. I'm not about to flip the coin and tell you who's going to finish where, but you look at the Mississauga Steelheads along with Oshawa's 10-game heater. Mississauga has not lost in regulation in 10. They are 8-0-2. You look at the North Bay Battalion. I've liked them from the get-go. Sorry, North Bay. I liked you last year too, and that didn't work out for either of us. So I'll just stop it right there. However, 7-2-1, so points in 8 of their past 10 games for the North Bay Battalion. Those are three teams: Oshawa, Mississauga, North Bay, all playing the right way at the right time. It is so much fun in the Eastern Conference right now.
For sure. And we talked about, you and I both liked Sudbury off the hop, but with some hesitance, right? We weren't sure we wanted to grant them just based on track record. And that seems to have come into play here, because you talk about it. They went from potentially getting a first round matchup against Barrie to now probably being on the road against, you're looking at a North Bay, a Mississauga, a Brantford. If season were to end today, it would be Brantford. So you're not getting an easy run in the first round. So now it becomes infinitely more difficult for them to actually come out of that conference. So, but what a fun stretch it is in that conference. These are the types of seasons that make it so fun for a fan.
I just want to throw one more thing in here randomly, because it popped into my head when I mentioned Jeff Merrick. We had said several weeks back that the next commissioner of the Ontario Hockey League is not going to be who you think it's going to be. Joe Birch's name was obviously out there in so many circles. A fair bit of talk about Barkley Branch as well. That was our way, without naming names, to tell you, hey, it's not going to be one of those guys. And we certainly know that Birch is out of the running, having re-upped to an extension in Kitchener. But it wasn't until Jeff Merrick started reporting it that there was more talk about it. So I'm just going to throw one more name in here before Jeff Merrick does. If Merrick's already done it, sorry, buddy. Mike Fiuta. I'm going to put that out there, let you absorb that. Mike Fiuta. And I'll just leave it there for now. But let's just say, in the mix, I would think, for that role that will be changing hands in June. I think the Ontario Hockey League still has lots of ways to go, but that's a name I'm starting to hear more and more. So I just thought we'll throw the name right out there this time, and you can send your hate mail to ohlpodcast@rogers.com. Okay. Did the Saginaw Spirit foe their chance at finishing first overall. What overagers maybe deserve a closer look from pro teams and get that contract as we head into the OHL playoffs? We're going to dip into the email inbox for Charlie from Kingston. 14 OHL grads do something real, real special, and our prospects of the week. My goodness gracious, lots still to come on this episode of the OHL podcast. And let's start with the Memorial Cup hosts. A night after they came from behind late to knock off the Guelph Storm in overtime, they couldn't do the same in Erie versus the Otters. Erie wins 5-4, and suddenly Saginaw is chasing the London Knights for first place. Can they catch them?
It just, for me, it just highlights how good this league is and how really almost any team can beat almost any team in any given night. And you look at a roster like Saginaw, stacked as it may be, you cannot let your foot off the gas on any night. And we talked about those teams, Mike, before the break that are really rolling down the stretch. We didn't even mention the Erie Otters have points in, I believe, seven or eight of their last 10 games. They're rolling. They're a good team. They're a structured team. And if you let down your guard against a team like that, they're going to bite you. So I think it's a bit of a wake-up call for Saginaw. And to answer your question about can they catch them, I'm starting to think no. I'm starting to think it's settling out, but I'm also starting to think they might not have been terribly concerned about it either way. The opponents at the bottom end of that conference are still shuffling each other out. All it really will make a difference in is potentially a third-round matchup against each other for who gets home ice. But it's starting to look like that the green machine is locking things down here.
Yeah, you talked about keeping your foot on the gas. And if there's a team that does that as well as or better than any other team, I would submit to you that team is the London Knights. They've had their foot on the gas pretty much for the entire second half of the season. They went on that incredible unbeaten in regulation run. What did they get to? 23, 24 games. It was a crazy run. Speaking of runs, we should give a nod to Easton Cowan, 34 games consecutive with a point. That sets a new London Knights franchise record for a point streak, taking away from David Gilmour. No relation to Doug. Doug holds the league, the CHL record of 55 games. David Gilmour, a different spelling, in 93-94 with the London Knights, had a 33-game heater. Easton Cowan, a Leafs prospect, now at 34 games. But I just don't see how London lets this slip out of their grasp, because again, they're not one that is likely to take their foot off the gas. If they win out, they get to reach 50 wins, which is just a real special number. Saginaw can do the same thing, but if Saginaw is going to catch London now, the Knights have to lose a game while Saginaw wins out. London's remaining games versus Windsor and Guelph, and Saginaw's remaining games are versus Sarnia, Windsor, and Sault Ste. Marie. The only one of those at home is Windsor, so two on the road. But still, I think just with the back-to-back games, the interesting thing for me will be the game against Guelph, the final game of the regular season for the London Knights. It might be, by that point, it might be all elementary. It might be meaningless points-wise. But if you can still get to 50 wins, if you can, I don't think you're gonna rest. Again, we'll use that foot on the gas analogy. It's going to be tough road ahead for the Saginaw Spirit if they want to finish first.
And you know the London Knights are going to continue to be motivated for those last two games, especially with Easton Cowan's streak still alive. If he gets it for two more games, then he can continue that into next year. That regular season streak can just keep rolling, assuming he's back. Impressive, though, that David Gilmour managed that streak before joining Pink Floyd.
I like that one.
I had to throw that one in, but we're going with all kinds of 70s references. Why not, right?
Little Dark Side of the Moon never hurt anybody. And I'll take the Saginaw thing just one step further. I know it's getting a little bit putting the cart ahead of the horse, but if Saginaw finishes second and the West goes London, Saginaw, Sioux, Kitchener, and the top four advance, not to take away, you've already talked about Erie, Flint's playing well. I don't think there are easy outs necessarily, but let's say the top four advance, suddenly you're going to have a second round between Saginaw and Sault Ste. Marie, the Memorial Cup hosts versus the team that wanted to host, one of the other teams that wanted to host the Memorial Cup. Oh, the drama. It'll be better than the ninth season of Dallas, but I'll just leave that right here and we'll move on. It's way down the road. But when we get there, if we get there, boy, that's a nice little subplot. Some guys have gotten there, Dan. We already mentioned Connor Punnett. We talked about Max McHugh when it happened. Free agent overagers that are signing with NHL teams. You brought this idea forward. I'd love to know who you might have in mind as a player in the Ontario Hockey League that has not been drafted, but might just be worth, I don't know, can you call it a flyer when it's worth like $2.7 million? But anyway, a team could sign.
Well, if you ever ask yourself as a player or a parent of a player, what is it worth returning for my overage year? Well, here's why. You just named a couple names. I'd add in Justin Ertl as another one who signed an overage contract with the Dallas Stars based on how strong his play has been in the second half of this year. So this is an opportunity to showcase yourself. And there's a lot of eyes on you on kind of on the fence. Is this kid worth a contract or not? Well, those are names that just proved themselves. And then the ones who have yet to earn that contract, who are on that cusp and have done enough this year, in my opinion, and in the opinion of the Hockey Pipeline too, who flagged some of these names. You look at two names out of Owen Sound with Denny Gurr and Sam Sedley. You look at Matthew Sopp in Kitchener. And then, of course, Sam Maye in Ottawa are four names that jump off the page as there's pro potential. There's certainly some pro tools here. Are they worth a shot? Clearly, I think all four of those guys are worthy of playing pro next year and then having two, three more years to kind of develop their games, work on what they need to do to maybe on the outside chance get a shot at the NHL. But that's some high-end talent there to look at four names like that just in the OHL who have not yet earned a contract. So NHL teams have to be looking at those four, wouldn't you think, Mike?
Matt Sopp's a guy I get to see every night. I've watched him develop. The trajectory has been so nice. And 42 goals. And what is he up to? 85, 86 points now at this point. I mean, 100 points isn't going to happen. For a while, we thought it might. But regardless, the trajectory has been really nice. The development has been there. And he's having himself a real nice year. Sam Sedley is rewriting the record books in Owen Sound for a defenseman. He's more of a rover, in fairness. But still, I wanted to throw another name completely out of the blue into this mix. And I acknowledge that I recognize the flaws, which is not to pick on the kid, because I want to pump his tires a little bit here. But I love the story because he's undrafted into this league, the Ontario League. And we saw this work with Arbor Jacki not too long ago, again, having watched him develop in Kitchener. But Oliver Peer, for my money, is a really interesting case here. He was more than a point a game last year. He's more than a point a game this year, and his point production has improved. He's 78 points now in 64 games heading into the final weekend. He's with a pretty stubborn Flint team, but he didn't miss a beat really in the trade from Windsor, where he was comfortable, had Greentree as a line mate, etc. Over to Flint he goes. But he's the kind of guy that could provide the sort of depth scoring that American hockey, like teams like to have in their system, because if the AHL team is doing well, then that just helps continue building that culture or fostering that culture within an organization. So knocks on Peer, his 200-foot game probably isn't where it needs to be. And the other thing I would say that's a knock that's not even his fault is that he's a skilled, speedy forward. And dare I say, there are more of those guys than there are Samuel Maye's, to use an example that you've already brought up, right? So there are more players like him, but gosh, do I like the story of being undrafted into the O, and wouldn't it be cool if undrafted, he finds his way as a free agent onto a National Hockey League club. He got the chance to take a look with Calgary last summer at their development camp. Who knows what happens? Flint's going to be in tough in the first round because they're going to start on the road, but I would love to see Oliver Peer. I know some people are kicking tires on him. Whether or not he gets a contract, I can't say.
Great call on Oliver Peer. What a great kid too. So we know he's already got NHL level skating.
Yeah.
So that's one of the first things any of the NHL teams will look at. Well, skating's already checked, and you can teach some of the defense. You can teach some of the other things. But I'd also point out, you did, that he was on a first place Windsor team last year. This year gets moved to the Flint Firebirds for a stretch run. A few people question the move. Well, Oliver Peer was a huge factor in why that team is, I think, 6-3-1 in their last 10 and locked down a playoff spot, might even move up from eighth. So it might have been the difference in staying above Sarnia and keeping themselves in the playoffs there. So he's a difference maker, and I love that. I love that call. Someone's going to bite on Oliver Peer with his production and speed. You're absolutely right.
I think it'd be a fun story, and I'm all about the story for sure. Charlie sends us an email, ohlpodcast@rogers.com. Good evening, gentlemen. How did he know we record this at night? You're right, Charlie, we do. As most of us have all watched years of hockey, we know the unofficial transition from regular season officiating to postseason officiating is now upon us. Regular season being lots of penalties and power plays, postseason being whistles gone away, minimal penalties and power plays. Would you guys rather see the officials call the game the same all season long, or does the change in officiating style bring a different kind of excitement or frustration to the playoffs? Charlie from Kingston. Charlie, appreciate the email. Send one yourself anytime, ohlpodcast@rogers.com. Dan, what do you think?
First of all, thanks for the email, Charlie. Love Kingston. What a great city. Love the barn. Everything about it. So thanks for the email, Ed. Great question. I come in at this maybe, I don't know what you'd call it, but I'm very much call the rule book. If it's a penalty, it's a penalty. If it's a penalty in October, it should be a penalty in April. And I 100% hear that perspective about, well, maybe it makes the game more intense. That ramps up the physicality when, you know, refs let a little bit more go and let them play. So I don't love the let them play phrase, because I always translate that to let the team who's better at cheating have an advantage. And really, if you think about it, it is, because the team that's more effective at interfering, holding, doing some of the stuff that's kind of flying under the wire there. In my opinion, the rule book exists for a reason. A penalty is a penalty for a reason. Just call it. And I know people will always say, well, we don't want whistle after whistle, penalty after penalty. You don't want games ending on a power play. Well, my answer to that is teams learn. Teams aren't dumb. You call it that way, they're going to adjust. They're going to stop doing the things that are against the rules. And if you end up in the box when a critical goal is scored, don't blame the refs, blame the player who took the penalty. So I'm very much call the rule book, Mike. I don't know where you land on this.
I actually think I'd be on the opposite side of this fence. I look at it more as game management as opposed to calling everything by the letter. And I should have looked this up ahead of time. So my apologies to the crew. And it was a 4-man crew. I want the lineys to get the credit for this too, but there was a London Kitchener game in Kitchener a few weeks ago. And to a person, Dan, people were saying after that game, it's one of the best games they've seen all season. Put that in a bottle and sell it if you're the Ontario Hockey League, because it was just that good a junior game. Perfectly executed? No. Some stuff that was let to go, kind of let the players play? Yes. And it was entertaining. Two talented teams going at it into overtime. And I'd like to give that officiating crew credit now. So I'm sorry I didn't look up the names, but I remember saying it that night and we talked about it afterwards. And I would submit to you that the reason it's not so much that we have a change in officiating when the playoffs come around, there might be a little bit to that, but more so you get the more experienced officials when the playoffs roll around, especially as you go deeper into the playoffs, who are more likely to officiate a game the way we saw one late in the season in Kitchener between the Rangers and the Knights. And again, it comes down to me to game management. I like your point, Dan. I really do, about it's the team that cheats better that wins. Okay. But a little hook here, a little pick there, as long as it's not goofy stuff, I think I'm okay with it. Because if you figured out how to effectively pick me over here, then I'm going to figure out how to effectively pick you over there, because they're not calling that tonight. So I think that it's less about the playoffs and the magnitude of the games than it is about the more experienced crews who manage games a little bit more effectively. And they're not afraid to be managed. They're not afraid to let this little tidbit go or that little tidbit go over there. And that's what we get. So I think officiating is a really hard job. It is a really hard job. I never want to do it. I think we do pretty well in this league. There are instances, I get it. I was just in Guelph on the weekend and fans were pretty fired up, and some of the others around the rink were pretty fired up about whatever happened there last Friday night. I wasn't there, didn't see it. We get that from time to time. But generally speaking, we do all right. And I think what we're seeing in the playoffs is just an example of more experienced crews with that game management as opposed to letter of the law.
There's no doubt that the experienced, strong officials get that better. They get the flow of the game better. And the other thing I will say is that if you were to ask the players, the bench staff and the players, which way they'd rather go, pretty much to a person, they're going to say, let us play, let it go. That's where they're all error. So fair enough if that's what you want. But I did like your point about officiating is a really tough job, because if you let a lot of that stuff go, the officials are going to hear about it. Well, why didn't you call that? Why didn't you call this? Why didn't you call that? So the players that told them to let us play, let it go, are yelling at them when they don't call it. And then we, of course, know what happens when they do call it. They get yelled at even more. So it's a no-win proposition for the officials. So you really do learn to appreciate those games you described, Mike, where the officials, no one even thought about them until probably 24 hours later. Like, you know what? That was actually a pretty well-officiated game. I didn't really notice anything egregious. That was effective game management when that's the case. So tip of the cap to one of the hardest jobs out there.
Amen to that. Speaking of officiating, it's kind of the next level of it, but I just happened to glance at the media notes page on the OHL website today. You see how many suspensions are out there right now? None of them are carrying over into the playoffs, and it's yet to be seen if anything comes from what we talked about earlier as far as Chase Coughlin is concerned. But my goodness gracious, we're going to see a couple of guys in Kitchener on Tuesday night just coming back from suspensions with Guelph. Tommy Budnick had just come back. I just saw him on the weekend. He just returned from a suspension. Sawyer Bolton, Kashawn Aitchison. There's a whole bunch of guys that are suspended right now. What the hell is going on?
I think I did. I don't know. Do you remember the URL? I think it was OntarioHockeyLeague.com/Sawyer Bolton. Is that the page?
That's its own page? Is that what you're saying?
I had to throw it in there just because I made a few appearances on that page this year.
He has. And he's on there right now.
But you're right. There are a lot of them. And a lot of the threshold suspensions, the exceeding the limit of head checks and those kind of suspensions. So these guys might want to clean their games up before the playoffs. And then, of course, my other question is, do those thresholds still apply in the playoffs equally, or is that going to next season too? But anyway, I digress. I'm just throwing stuff at the wall here.
It reminded me of Ryan McGuire, who also wasn't in the game on Sunday in Guelph. We'll be back tomorrow night, Tuesday, when they play a rematch, Storm and Rangers in Kitchener. And he's been in that exceeding the threshold of category already, facing suspension. But boy, do I love this kid's game. He has got some snot, and I like a player that plays with a little bit of snot. I don't know how much snot they played with, but we would be remiss if we didn't give a nod, Dan, to the 25 CHL grads. They all came out of the league that we follow and cover, 14 of them right out of the Ontario Hockey League with the UNB Reds. History, every game included a 43-0 run. I do believe it's the first time ever teams have gone into the U Sports Championship undefeated before, but not won the title. The Reds just did that. And again, you take the sum. In fact, if you go back to last season's championship, they're 47 straight games without tasting defeat. And they set a new record this year when they did not allow a goal in their four playoff games, four consecutive shutouts. When is Gardner McDougal just going to cash in somewhere and take an NHL job just for the money?
I was just going to say, that guy probably said, I'll shave the mustache as soon as we lose, right? So going to have that thing eternally. But yeah, maybe he should just stay, keep doing what he's doing, because you don't see in any league anywhere globally too many records like that.
It's absolutely incredible. Kudos to all of the CHL grads, and in particular, the 14 from the Ontario League that won a U Sports Championship with the UNB Reds. A remarkable season. Okay, it brings us to the time of our podcast where we provide for you our favorite prospect of the week. So this is an NHL draft eligible. I've never explained this before. I don't know why I feel the need to do it now, but just as a reminder for our first-time listeners, the NHL draft comes up in June. We like to give you somebody that caught our attention who is eligible for that NHL draft in June. Who caught your eye this week, Dan?
All right, well, I'm going a little down the road to the east again, Mike, and I'm going with someone who stats might not be eye-popping necessarily, but you know how I love big game players, Mike, and guys that make themselves a factor in every game. Mississauga Steelheads went into a huge matchup, point apart in the standings against the Brantford Bulldogs in their barn. And I'm looking at who's stepping up, and guess who stepped up with two goals and assist. It's Mason Zabeski, a guy who is a late birthday. So he's coming into this draft as an October born player, 23 goals on the season. Some pretty big ones in there too. Like a guy that knows how to rev up the motor when the game's tight, when the game's important. So he looks to me like a guy that's going to catch the eye of some teams, some scouts. And I think you talked about it, Mike, how the eyes really come on you in the playoffs. And there's a guy who I expect will be turning some heads in the playoffs. My guy is Mason Zabeski. Here you go.
I think I said the same thing last week about Henry Muse. Big games, big players coming up in big moments. And he had himself a big weekend in meaningful games for Ottawa. And I feel the need now to also explain that we don't plan this in advance. Okay, but I am also going with a Mississauga Steelhead this week. And I looked at Jakob Fibiger. This is a guy that I've kind of had an eye on all through the season. One of the things I like about him is that he's a first-year player in this league. And we have seen imports, when they come over, Dan, sometimes take a moment to become acclimatized to what's going on here in North America and in the Ontario Hockey League. Well, not really so for Jakob Fibiger. He kind of hit the ground running. He gives you everything you want in terms of his versatility, right? He's good defensively. He's got great transition. That first pass is excellent. He's got some offensive jam. He'll do power play. He'll penalty kill. And he's picked himself up 5 assists in the past 3 games. So that guy for me, Jakob Fibiger, is my prospect of the week. Get some love for the Mississauga Steelheads here on the pod today.
That guy also put up 3 points in that huge game too. So similar logic to my choice as well. Again, like you said, a great skater, great, does a lot of things well. And look out for that Mississauga Steelheads team. I feel like we're saying this about a lot of teams, but really I would not want to face that team in the first round either.
Well, I was just about to say that, Dan, because we talked about Oshawa creating separation for sure, but you're not going to sleep on North Bay, right? No. Mississauga, we mentioned in passing earlier, but points in 10 consecutive games, an 8-0-2 run. I mean, North Bay's in there. Ottawa, you'd never, ever even nap on. Like, just the Eastern Conference is bananas. And we haven't even really talked. I was looking at Gabriel Frasca this week. Yeah. We haven't even talked really about the Kingston Frontenacs, and they've been playing better since the deadline. And look, I would not want to be a top 4 team in the East, at least going in thinking you have an easy time, because it's not going to be an easy time at all.
Not at all. And I mean, just to bring it back to Mississauga for a second, their biggest issue going into the playoffs is, who do you play, Ivan Kovac or Lingers? I mean, it's like 1A and one, like, this is crazy. I mean, you talked about Swayman and Ullmark and the Boston Bruins last year. This might be a notch above that at the junior level. I mean, talk about tough luck for whichever one of those guys sits on the bench. They both earned it in spades and would be the starters in most markets. But what a good problem to have.
Mississauga arriving maybe a year ahead of schedule, but they're a lot of fun. And as we've said many times, that Eastern Conference is a lot of fun. We are going to have a feature interview coming up this Friday. He was a captain in this league, drafted by, I better remember now, who drafted him? New York Rangers, I'm pretty sure. That's terrible, I'm forgetting. But ended up going to Europe, having a decent career over there, and then an even better career as a coach. Has he got some stories from the coaches he played for, played against, including, there was a quote from this player's coach in the 74 playoffs. Either way, not even the hand of God could help the opposing team beat us, and the opposing team, coached by Roger Nielsen, did beat them. So anyway, you're going to get some real fun stories with a former captain in this league who's still going strong. He's a hockey lifer, and you're going to love it. So watch for that feature interview coming up on Friday.
The hand of God, is that a Diego Maradona reference?
It's got to be.
A lot of 70s references in here.
We'll just keep them coming. Come for the content, stay for the 70s and 80s references. That guy over there is Dan Mahar. Find him on Twitter at his name, Dan Mahar. I'm Mike Farwell on Twitter at Farwell_OHL. Send us an email anytime, OHLpodcast@rogers.com. Check out the OHL podcast on Instagram. Follow on the YouTube channel. Like, subscribe, tell a friend, because we need more friends. Have you noticed? We sit around talk hockey to each other every week. We need friends. Get some friends over here. Thanks for listening to the OHL podcast.
I'm Matt Kundle, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent. Almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.